and speak about something from this coming week's Sedra. On the Pasuk Vayeshev Yaakov, Rashi brings down the following medrash. Bikesh Yaakov Leshe B'Shalva. Yaakov wanted to sit in peace, in serenity. Immediately the sorrow of Yosef jumped on him. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lodai L'tzadikim Mashem Mesukin Lahem L'Olam Haba. It's not enough for the tzadikim what they have prepared for them in the world to come. U'mevakshim Leishe B'Shalva Olam Hazeh, and they want to take it easy in this world, serenity. So the Rebbeinu Shlom didn't permit him, and he brought upon him the calamity of Yosef. So the Mefarshim ask, what's so terrible? Why can't have a tzaddik have it good in this world and the next world? What's the Rebbeinu Shlom saying? It's not enough what you have in the next world, you want this world too? And we know that it's not true. There are many tzaddikim. Rabbi Kiva Eger asked this question, Torah Tamima and many others. There are many tzaddikim who are zochet to this world and the next world. Lo hakol zochem l'shtei shulchanos. Not everybody gets two tables, the Gemara says. In other words, this world and the next world. But not everybody doesn't either. So, what's so terrible? So the Torah Tamima points out that in the Medrash it seems to be that a mistake fell into Rashi. And if we understand that mistake, then there's no question. In the Medrash, it doesn't say Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said is not enough for the tzaddikim what they have in the next world, but Omer HaSotan, the Sotan said, or HaSotan Mekatrik, or the Sotan came with a complaint. So it's not God who said that isn't enough what the tzaddikim have in the world to come, it's the Sotan who said it. So the Sotan can say whatever he wants. And therefore, there's no problem. But the question still stands. I don't know what the Torah Tamima thought he answered. Because the Sultan doesn't run this world. God does. The Sultan can only bring complaints. But if God doesn't agree, he doesn't agree. But obviously God agreed. So in final analysis, God said, you're right. And therefore, I'm not going to let Yaakov have that serenity. So he brought upon him the tzara of Yosef. So obviously God agreed. Yeah, but he did agree to give him the test. If he didn't agree, he wouldn't give him the test. Right? In the end, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam's decision. Sultan doesn't have free reign, just the opposite. From EU, you see exactly what I'm saying. The Sultan couldn't do anything without God's permission. And if the Ribbono Shel wouldn't have given permission, he couldn't have done anything. Same thing over here. The Sultan could not have brought on Yaakov, Rogues or Shel Yosef, if God didn't agree. So in the end, God agreed. So in the Balei HaTosfos, Al HaTorah, there's a different version of this, which adds a little bit of a dimension that we can begin to get an understanding of what's going on over here. Because on the surface, it seems like spite. Like, you know, don't you have enough? You have enough in the world to come? You need this world too? And that's very difficult to understand. We'll see that there's much, much deeper ideas here. The Balei HaTosfos, the version is, Bikesh Yaakov Leishe B'Shalva V'Likboa Makom. Yaakov wanted to sit in peace, serenity, and to set a place for himself. L'Kboa Makom, to set a place. Now those words need explanation, but they're an addition to what Rashi said. Omer L'Akadosh Baruch Hu Ein Okay. And God said, no, it's not like that. HaTzadikim Ein Lahem Menucha Ba'olam Hazeh. Tzadikim are not supposed to have rest in this world. And then it brings a muscle. And this muscle is even harder to understand. There was once a chassid who married his son off to an orphan girl. A rich chassid. And he made a tremendous simcha when he married this boy to this orphan girl. And before the wedding, he sent his son up to the roof to get a cask of wine for the guests. Son went up to the roof, he was bitten by a snake, and he died. They went looking for him, the father, and he found him dead on the roof. So he came down, he said, you came for a wedding, stay for a funeral. Why? Because simcha isn't for tzaddikim in this world. It's too much simcha, and therefore something marred the simcha. There's a medrash tanchuma that even says worse. Says that simcha never stays for anybody in this world. joy never tarries, never stays too long for people in this world. It's going on the fact that Elisheva Bas Aminadab, on the day that the Mishkan was consecrated, she was the happiest woman in the world. She saw her husband being installed as the first high priest, her brother-in-law was Moshe Rabbeinu, her children being installed as the regular priests, her brother Nachshon, right, was the first of the heads of the tribes to bring a sacrifice. She had such nachas as you can imagine. And that day, two of her children died. Because simcha doesn't last for anybody. There's always a monkey wrench. And then the Medrash brings something even more difficult. It says, God said, when I created the world, I could have remained happy, but I didn't remain happy too long because Adam and Chava sinned. They made me unhappy. So if I couldn't remain happy, nobody's going to remain happy. Seems like it's a lot of spite. I mean, God saying, I couldn't be happy, nobody's going to be happy. What does that mean? Well, we'll get to all of this eventually. There's another version of this Rashi, also found in the Bali Atosfos. Bikesh Yaakov Lios Bishalva, the Leishev Bishvil Hatir the Shahoyalov Beslova. Yaakov wanted to sit in serenity because of all the troubles he had in the house of Lava. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Dai Lohem LeTzadikim LeOlam Haba, not enough for Tzadikim what they have in the world to come. Chayecha Ani I Atah Zocha L'Shtei Shulchanos. Because of that, you're not going to merit having two tables, one in this world, one in the next world. Because of this, because you, whatever you did wrong, since it's a punishment for Yaakov, really Tzadikim can have it both in this world and the next world. Because you did something wrong, I'm not going to let you have this world and the next world. Right? Miyad tirdo HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Yosef. Immediately God bothered him with the whole tzara of Yosef. And then it brings the marshal with this chassid. Well, this is very, very difficult. So first let's put the punishment into perspective. Right? It seems that this was not a very strict punishment to Yaakov. He did something terribly wrong for a few reasons. First of all, this whole parsha of Yosef, that Yosef would go into Mitzrayim and Yaakov would follow him, was going to happen anyway. Because eventually they would have to go down to Mitzrayim, and the Rebbeinu Shem chose the way to bring Yaakov following his son Yosef. So eventually it was going to happen. So what happened? Kofatz alav. It jumped on him. In other words, it happened earlier. So it wasn't that the whole mice of Yosef happened only because of this, but it happened earlier because of this. That's one thing. Also, it could be Rotzo shel Yosef, the machlokes, and the whole way that it happened could have happened differently. Could have been Yosef would have gone down to Mitzrayim and become the king there, or whatever. But the way that it happened with the brothers and everything, that was part of Yaakov Avinu's causing. But it wasn't that the whole thing was caused because of Yaakov Avinu. It either happened earlier or happened in a much not nicer way because of what Yaakov did, that he should have to suffer from. Beyond that, the Imre Shefer says that there was already a gzeira made from the time of Avraham Avinu that the Jewish people would be gerim in Eretz Yisrael, ger be'eretz lo lohem. They wouldn't be able to be so comfortable until they left Egypt. Many years later, for 400 years, they were going to be in a very uncomfortable state. Now, if Yaakov would have been comfortable, it would have gone against that whole prophecy. So he couldn't be comfortable anyway. So it's not so much of a punishment. It was already part of a previous decree. Beyond that, Rav Yisrael Yehuda Malan says that really, Yaakov Avinu himself was fit to have a little serenity and peace. Because tzaddikim start off bad, but end off good. And Yaakov was at the end of his life, pretty much, and he could have had it good. He was towards the end. He was after all the tzaras. He had the beginning of bad, right? And now he could have had shalva. But Yosef was just starting his career, and he had to start off there. So for Yosef's sake, the Rebbeinu Shalom made the things happen bad, but Yaakov inevitably suffered from it. Now, if Yaakov didn't have some reason why he deserved to suffer, it wouldn't have happened either. So Yaakov had something why he needed to suffer, but the main reason why Yosef's thing happened was for Yosef's sake, not for his. The Tiferet Sion says another idea. He says that really Yaakov as an individual should have had some peace and quiet already in his life. But each of Yaakov's tzaras represented not only his personal tzaras, they represented the ultimate tzaras that the Jewish people go through in the four exiles. Yaakov had four tzaras in his life: Esav, and then Lavan, and then Dinah, and then Yosef. So the tzar of Esav was similar to Babel. We were forced to leave Eretz Yisrael. And the tzar of Lavan is when we were already in Galus, then we had another tzar of Madai. The other exile came when we were in Galus already. Babel and then Madai, right? That was before the second temple was built. Madai Paras, Persian Media. And then, we came back to Eretz Yisrael, right? And that's what happened with Dina. Came back and he had Tsaras in Eretz Yisrael. That was like Yavan, like the Greeks. And then Yosef was a prolonged Tsara, right? And brought them eventually down to Mitzrayim for 400 years, just like Edom, like we're in Galus now, the second Galus, a long time. So those, therefore, Yaakov did not have peace and serenity, not because of his own reasons, but this had to be a foundation for the future. Whatever happens to the Avos is a sign for the children. So this was for the sake of Klal Yisrael that Yaakov had to go through this tzara to prepare the way for our tzara in this Galus. Okay, the Brisker Rav argues on that. He doesn't speak about it, but from what he says is an argument on that, because the Brisker Rav points out that this tzara of Yosef was an unusual tzara. All the other tzaras of Yaakov, he suffered as part of the Jewish people. It was a Jewish people suffering. Because everybody who was the Jewish people at the time suffered them. Avraham Avinu suffered, Yitzchak Avinu suffered, and they all suffered as the Jewish people, right? Yaakov, in all the individual sufferings he had, everybody who was Jewish was there suffering with him, except for Yosef. By Yosef, all the people who were the Jewish people didn't suffer. The Shvatim knew what happened. They weren't suffering. Yitzchak knew, God told him, so he wasn't suffering, and they were all part of the Jewish people. The only one suffering was Yaakov as an individual. This was an individual suffering, Yosef, not a cloud suffering. So it seems to the Brisker Rav that this answer wouldn't apply. Okay. Now, putting into perspective the punishment that Yaakov got, right, wasn't a serious punishment. There was something small here, right, because something was not 100% the way it should be. So the Imre Shefer sends in the name of the Akedas Yitzchak that Yaakov Avinu sinned because he tried to make this world a set place, a permanent place. And when Tzaddikim try to make this world a set place, then the Satan is Mekatre, because Shlema's perfection can only happen in the world to come, not in this world. Okay? And that's what it seems the Balei HaTosfos are saying. Vayeshev Yaakov, Bikesh Yaakov, Leishev Likboa Mako. He wanted to make this place set. Right? And we'll see what that means in a second. And the Rabbeinu Yerucham, Rabbi Yerucham from Mir, the Mashgiach of Mir, Yerucham Levavitz, says a similar idea. He says he wanted to make out of Olam Hazeh Olam Haba. He wanted already to have Olam Haba in this world already. And that can't be. You can't change this world into the next world. The idea being the following. It says in Pirkei Avos, Ha'olam Hazeh Doma L'Prozdor B'Fnei Ha'olam Haba. This world is like a preparation room to a castle. Prepare yourself in the preparation room so you'll be able to go into the castle. This world is distinctly different than the next world. This world is a means to reach an end. It's not an end in itself. Nothing in this world is for the sake of itself. It's all to be able to earn and create the world to come. The Meiri says, this world is like the seeds, and in Olam Haba you reap the fruit. Here you plant, there you reap. There's no other reason. God created this world only that we should be able to earn and create Olam Haba. Because if it wasn't for that purpose, there wouldn't be a purpose to this world. God would have created our neshamas, showered his glory on them, and given us Olam Haba. But he knew that we wouldn't appreciate it. So he wanted us to appreciate it by earning it. So the only reason he created this world is for the sake of earning Olam Haba. There is no intrinsic value. That's exactly the analogy to the preparation room to the castle. You don't make the preparation room for any other purpose than preparing to go into the castle. You don't equip it with anything else, and you don't do anything else there. The total purpose of a preparation room to a castle is to prepare to go in the castle. Nothing else. The entire purpose of this world is to be a means and not an end in itself. Here's where you do, that's where you reap the reward. So any trying to take this world and making it an end in itself, making it a place, not just a ma'abar, a passageway, is totally distorting what this world is. That doesn't mean you can't be happy in this world, but not happy as a goal in itself. Happy because that may be a means to be able to get more olam if you're happy. But not happy because there's some kind of intrinsic value to be happy, which is the antithesis of even from Jews. You know, there's an idea of having fun. Let's have fun. There's no idea of having fun in this world. That's olam haba, is the place to have reward, to have serenity and peace and enjoyment. This is a world to utilize things. You can utilize fun, not have fun. Right? You can utilize pleasant things for good purposes, but it's only a means to reach an end. It's never an end, never a goal in itself. Even those things that Chazal say that you get rewarded for in this world, it's not a reward. There is no reward in this world. Schar mitzvah b'hayal malecha, right? Reward for mitzvah in this world doesn't exist. And it says that there are things that a person eats the fruit in this world, and the main reward is in the next world. Sounds like there is reward. No, that's only that you get the fruits of those mitzvahs, not as a reward, as an incentive to be able to do more. It's a means. It's not an end. Nothing is an end in this world. Therefore, Chazal say, "Aser la'adam l'mali schok pi v'olam hazeh." You're not allowed to fill your mouth with laughter in this world. You can laugh, but not as a end. When it's filled with laughter, then it's an end in itself. Then it's a goal. That's not the case. Oz yumalei shokpino. The goal of being, having pleasure, whatever's in the next world. There's no goal of pleasure in this world. There's utilization of pleasure for a goal, but not as a goal in itself. And therefore, what we can say about Yaakov Avinu was the following. Again, we're speaking about one of the Avos, so we're speaking on very subtle levels. But we're going to speak about it in a way that we can understand. Yaakov Avinu felt that he already passed through all the nisyonos of this world, right, that earned him olam haba. In other words, he pretty much felt pretty much complacent about his olam haba. He went through all the different kinds of nisyonos, right, that a person can go through in this world, and I'll explain it a little bit in detail. The Medrash says, Lo sholafti, v'lo shokatati, v'lo nachti, v'yavo rogu. It's a pasuk in Iyov. I wasn't serene, I wasn't quiet, I didn't have any nachas, I didn't rest. And then, after all that, v'yavo rogu, then came this agitation to me, this tzara. So the Medrash learns this to apply to Yaakov Avinu. Lo sholafti milava. I didn't have any shalva, any peace, because of lava. Lo shakatati, I didn't have any quiet because of Esav. Lo nachti, I didn't rest because of Dina. And then after all that, by Yavo Rogez, I had the tzara of Yosef. I was expecting that after these three things, that was it. And I think maybe it means like this. Shalva is the opposite of Yisurin, of suffering. Okay? How do I know that? Because it says, Tzadikim are Tchilasan Yisurin, and Sofan Shalva. So the difference is, Yisurim is the opposite of shalva. Okay? Now, Yisurim are suffering in this world, all kinds of suffering. You know, suffering with money, and suffering physically, and suffering with sickness, and suffering with shalom bias, all different kinds of suffering. And the purpose of suffering in this world is, one, that it erases your sins, and also it gives you motivation to be dynamic. Right? You have to face challenges. Facing challenges makes a person grow, if you face them properly. So that's Yisurim, right? A life where there's no challenges is a very boring life and an unproductive life. So the Rabban Hashem gives you challenges, all different kinds of Yisurim, right, to be ma'orer you, and also to show you the importance of what you're dealing with. When it comes hard, then you have to think about it, then you appreciate the things that you're doing. You do them in a more significant way. Right? When it comes easy, you don't think about it, and you just do it nonchalantly. So those are the reasons, the positive ideas of Yisurin. The suffering itself wipes away sin. The suffering awakens you to face a challenge and grow. Right? You become tempered because you have to work against an opposition. Thirdly, it, what's it called, makes you appreciate the thing that you're dealing with because it comes harder, doesn't come so easy. And fine, those are the basic ideas. Yaakov went through that with Laban. In Laban's house, he suffered. He suffered with his shalom bayis, and he suffered with getting married, and he suffered with money things, and he suffered with Laban's evil influences. Right, one thing after the other. Every kind of suffering you can imagine, Yaakov had already by Laban's house. So he had that ice aspect of this world, right, that helps you to get the world to come. Sheket is the opposite of being afraid, threatened. We have to cry out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You're not being tormented, suffering. You're just being threatened and intimidated. And then you cry out to God to save you from the threats and the intimidation. So the opposite of sheket is to call out, sa'aka, calling out, crying out to God. Okay? So that was Esav. Esav never did anything actually to Yaakov. He just threatened him. And Yaakov had to daven and plead to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's another kind of thing that we go through in this world. Right? We have a lot of things that intimidate us and threaten us. And we feel insecure. And that helps us to seek out the Ribbono Shel Olam and have trust in him and faith and daven to him. So that's another kind of difficulty in this world that helps us get Olam Haba. Then there's what's it called? Nachas. Nachas is menucha, rest. Okay? That's the opposite of putting in a lot of work. Okay? And when do you have to put in work? When you feel incomplete. If you feel complete, you can take it easy. So like Shabbos, you don't work on Shabbos because everything's finished. During the week, you feel incomplete, you have to work. Okay, Shabbos is more shalom, shleimus. That was with Dina. That didn't affect Yaakov directly, but he was guaranteed his share in the world to come if all his children would be okay. And here, his family was attacked, and it was pogum. And there was a tumah, and Shimon and Levi did something that threatened what's it called the good name of the Jewish people. So he felt now incomplete. There wasn't perfection by the Jewish people anymore. He had to work a little bit harder to bring back that perfection. That's also part of what this world is all about. Person feels incomplete, and he has to work hard to perfect himself and complete himself. So Yaakov felt that after all of this, I've gone through every possible thing that makes this world a means to reach Olam Haba, the Yisurim and the Tzaaka, the opposite of Sheket, and the opposite of Menucha. I had everything. So now, right, I can enjoy a little bit of the fruits of my labor in this world. And the Ribbono Shel Olam told him, no, nothing doing. If you look at your serenity and peace in this world as an end, that's counterproductive. Because you can use peace and serenity in this world as a means to now go on further. In fact, there's a Nisayan of Osher. There's another Nisayan when you're rich. That's also a Nisayan. But you use it as a means to reach more Olam Haba, not as a way just to take it easy. Okay? So therefore, what's it called? If you're Yaakov Avinu wanted to feel complete in this world, he wanted to feel, you know, just take a rest for a while or whatever, that's not in his that's not in his benefit, because then you're taking time in this world and you're not using it to be productive, and you're losing all of half. And that's why roges means agitation. In a washing machine, the thing that goes around, the propeller, is an agitator, because it keeps everything moving, right? Keeps you dynamic. And that's the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha. A rasha looks at this world as an end in itself. Having pleasure in this world is a goal. And he has it good in this world. But because of that, he creates no olam haba, and he has it terrible for eternity. The tzaddik understands that this world is the place for yisurim. This is the place to be dynamic. This is not the place to enjoy as a goal. And therefore, since he goes through all those yisurim, he has eternity of the goal of a reward. And therefore, there's a hint to the vayeshev. The fact that Yaakov wanted to take it easy emanated from the following. If you take all the tzoras that he had, you have what's it called? Yosef. The second letter of Yosef is Vav. Right? Okay. Then you have Dina. The second letter of Dina is Yud. Vav Yud. Then you have Esav. The second letter of Esav is Shin. Vav Yud Shin. And then you have what's it called? Lavan. The second letter of Lavan is Beis, Vayeshev. Now, I want to add to that. Without Yosef, it would be Yeshev. Yeshev means it would be future. Yeshev, in the future. Right? So without the Vav, without Yosef, what's it called? You would have Yeshev. Yaakov would sit in the future in serenity. But because he wanted to do it in the present, Vayeshev, so he needed Yosef to add on to his sorrows. Had he not wanted to change the future into the present, he wouldn't have needed Yosef. But it was the Vav of Yosef that came because of the Vayeshev, because he wanted to make it in the present. The Vav changes the future into the present. In addition, why the second letters? Because the second letters represent what comes from that. Don't look at the tzara. Look what the tzara initiates. The second letter is what emanates from that. The second thing is the emanation. Look at the emanation from the tzaras. Don't look at the tzaras as something terrible. Look at it as a means to reach an end. If you understand that, then you understand how this world has to be. But if you try to take your serenity and make it now and not in the future, then that's not a good thing. And therefore, they ask a question. Vayeshev, right, what Rashi is learning over here means he wanted to take it easy. Yet there's a Medrash Tanhuma that says, whenever it says Vayeshev, it means tzara and what's it called, and harada. It means what's it called, calamity. So which is it? Vayeshev represents calamity, or Vayeshev represents taking it easy? The answer is very simple. Vayeshev means to take it easy. But when you take it easy in this world, it's a calamity. Because you're wasting time. I'd love to give the following example. Rabbi Yeshua Mikutna says, Yaakov wanted to stay and as if he achieved perfection. He wasn't interested in perfecting himself anymore. He felt he's reached it in this world. And that's not good for a tzaddik, because you can always perfect yourself more. We always say to a living person, Lech Lishalom, go towards perfection. We only say to a dead person, Lech Bishalom, go in the perfection that you have already. A living person can constantly do more and more. So it's counterproductive for him not to want to do more and more and take it easy. And therefore, Shalva in this world has the idea of making this world into a place of itself. Not a means to reach an end, but an end in itself. And that is the antithesis of what this world is. And once you take the pleasure in this world and you make it a goal, then inevitably it's going to lead to bad kind of things. Then when Vayishman Yeshur and Yeshurah gets fat and they kick, and the pleasures of this world are counterproductive when you look at them as goals in themselves. You don't use them as a means to reach Olapap. The Reb Simcha Zissel from Kelen says that Yaakov should have realized the schar of Olam Haba is so great, that is the goal, that it's worth all the Yisurim in this world, because they're nothing compared to how great that schar is. And if you don't get that schar, the Yisurim over there is so much greater than any possible Yisurim you could have over here. So if you look at it like that, it's kedai to suffer your whole life in this world, because the goal is a tremendous thing. But if you don't suffer it all in your life, you're going to suffer later. That's terrible. Rav Yudalei Chasman says that Yaakov Avinu's problem was, right, that a person has to serve God in every possible matzah. In other words, God decides what is best for me. Since this world is only a means to reach an end, it's not an end in itself, So God is the one who knows what's best for me, what means is best for me. Something that's pleasurable, something that's not pleasurable. But God knows what's going to be for me the better chance of creating Olam Haba. But I see the situations that I see him in this world. Yaakov's problem was that he asked and he felt that he could only serve God in this situation if I have peace and quiet. Without peace and quiet, I can't. But let God decide what's better for you, since he's deciding what's better for you towards the future, not as you see it right now. So his problem was that he felt that he could only serve God if this situation existed, and that then the way of serving God in this world, God takes the situation. You have to then react to them properly and accommodate yourself to them. And the, what's it called? And that was the Tzeres Shlomo, so the same thing. He chose a situation that appeared to him to be conducive, but let God, have trust in God. God knows what's more conducive for you for the world to come, since the main thing is not what's now, but for the future. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu put too much focus, too much emphasis on what was things in this world. It wasn't that he really thought this world was the end. But once you start getting too much involved in how can I function in this world becomes a thing to itself. It's not only a means. It becomes a little bit like an end. And then it becomes a problem. And the Birukim says also that there's a difference between shalva and menucha. Shalva is what's it called, where you can feel comfortable when you like what's going on. Menucha, you can feel rested, right, and serene even when you don't like what's going on. You can have menuchas ha-nefesh. You can say, you can feel happy about something that you don't like, but you know it's for a purpose. Shalva is you can only feel that kind of happiness when you like what's going on. And that's not what this world is all about. It's not liking what's going on. It's understanding that it's beneficial. I can have a certain peace of mind knowing that even though I'm suffering for a reason, and the goal is a good goal. So that's the difference between shalva. Yaakov wanted shalva, not necessarily menucha. And therefore the Shirei Das says he went a little bit after his nature of making peace and quiet in this world more important than it was. Because that's not the goal. The goal is to be able to function. So you can function in other situations also. Don't make this an ikkar in your life that you should have shalva and peace and quiet or whatever. And the Yalkut Me'amloes, that's another dimension. He says the problem of Yaakov was that he asked for shalva when he had shalva ready. For a tzaddik to say, look, I'm suffering and I can't handle it, please God save me, there's nothing wrong with that. But you have things good. What are you asking for more? Right? If God wants a continuous, he sees you're using it properly, fine. If you're not using it properly, then it's in your advantage not to have it continue. So that was the problem. And the Tzfer Sion says that Yaakov's problem was that he made too much ishtadlus to try to get that peace and quiet, which itself was counterproductive. What are you wasting your time? Put your time into, you have the shalva already, put your time into doing things that are dynamic, not into putting in effort to continue the shalva. Then it becomes a goal in itself. And that's what the Ksav Sofer says, that Yaakov Avinu asked for a Nisayan. He wanted a Nisayan of Osher. But God told them that's a big Nisayan, that when if you're going to use it as a goal in itself, right, then it's going to take away from your Olam Haba. You're going to start using these things as a goal, it's going to take away from your Olam Haba. That's not a good Nisayan to have. And the Iturei Torah says a very interesting thing. He says Shalva is limited peace. Shalom is complete peace. Yaakov said, you know what, I'll settle for a limited peace in this world. And God said, no, manafshah. If it's a means to reach an end, then you want the most. You're not going to be satisfied with a little bit of peace. And if it's not a means to reach an end, then even a little bit is not good. So I'm going to push you to understand that, and you're going to get really good in this world. Not just limited good. 17 years he was in Egypt was the best years of his life. But don't settle for partial, because then you seem to say that's a goal. If you really realize that this is something that's going to spur you on to be more dynamic and get Olam Haba, then you'll go for the whole thing, not just for a little bit. Rabbi Akiva Eiger adds one more dimension. He says that every tzaddik, even if he has a good in this world, always has the doubts whether he's going to get the world to come or not. He's not guaranteed. So his shalva in this world, he understands, is directed towards a goal, because he's never sure about his world to come. He's always concerned. But Yaakov Avinu was guaranteed he'll get the world to come if all of his sons survived him, if he died before all of his children. So he had nothing to worry about Olam Haba. If he had shalva in this world, then it could be a goal in itself, because he had nothing to worry about for the world to come. So God said, no, I want you to worry about the world to come too. And they took away one of his sons, and he thought he was dead. And then he didn't have a guarantee anymore. And now the shalva will be for that goal and not as a thing in itself. And that's exactly what the Rebbeinu Shlomo said. Now let's get back to what Rashi says, and you can see a different light, a different tone altogether. Just let me end with a maisa, even though we're a little bit over time, but you give me another minute or two. And once, when I was a kid, they had a contest in the supermarket in our neighborhood, and the winner of the contest got 15 minutes in the supermarket to grab things off the shelf for free. And I remember went with my brothers, Aleihem HaShalom, to watch this woman. She bought special sneakers, she had two cards, she had a map of the supermarket, you know, where the more expensive things were. And they told me a 15 minutes. She went crazy, running from place, grabbing things or whatever. And imagine if somebody would have come to her in the middle of the 15 minutes and said, you know, lady, you look very tired, you know, short of breath, sweating. Here's a chair, sit down for a few minutes. No, she'd say, you're out of your mind. I only have 15 minutes. I'll sit down after the 15 minutes. Now's not the time to sit down. It's counterproductive. Same thing. We only have a certain limited amount of time in this world. And this is the place where you create the world to come. And without this world, you have nothing. This is not the world to take it easy. Take it easy. Believe me, there's plenty of people taking it easy after 20 years. Go to the cemeteries, they're just resting. This is the world where you're supposed to be dynamic and be involved and do things or whatever. So that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Bikesh Yaakov Leishe B'Shalva. Like we said, with all these ideas, he wanted to already experience that perfection, that enjoyment in this world of all of his thing, and not to be dynamic, not to give any more. Take a few minutes down from the 15 minutes of grabbing. The Rebbeinu Shlomo said, "Lo dayin l'tzadikim asher mukhlanim haba." It's never enough what a tzaddik has in the world to come. And you want to take it easy in this world? I'm not going to let you do it. That's the idea. It wasn't that the Rebbeinu Shlomo said, it's not enough what you have in the world to come. It was, it's not enough what you have in the world to come. It's never enough. I'm not going to let you take it easy. You're going to stop being productive, and this is the only time you have to be productive. So you're going to shortchange yourself. I'm not going to let you do that. That's the idea. And that's the idea that God said that simcha never remains for a person. Whenever simcha becomes a danger, that you can feel fulfilled, and you can then take it easy and not be dynamic, then God takes away the simcha, because it's not positive. When the simcha becomes almost like the world to come in this world, that's counterproductive. So God senses that the simcha can never be complete, because if it's complete, you're going to feel fulfilled, serene, not need to do anything more. And that's what God said. When I created the world, I could remain happy. I could have made perfect human beings who could never sin. But that wasn't the purpose of the world. The purpose of this world was to give people a chance to earn the world to come, not to be perfect in this world. And therefore I gave people the chance to sin. And they did sin. So if I couldn't remain happy, because the purpose of this world is not to be happy. The purpose of this world, you could be happy, but that's not the goal. The goal of this world is to be dynamic so you can be happy eternally. So that's how I created the world. So nobody's going to remain happy as a goal. That's not the purpose of the world. That's the idea. It's not that God's spiting us. I couldn't be happy, you're not going to be happy either. I could have been happy, but I didn't create the world for that. So therefore nobody's going to be happy. That's not the purpose of the world, that happiness should be the goal. Happiness can be a nice tool, a means. But once it becomes the goal, it's counterproductive.